let's start up and we'll do the final session and be out of here. What I was doing is discussing this generic driver that we use for LL. The thing to take away on this is that this is actually simulating the parsing procedures, but rather than having the names of the procedures wired in to a particular piece of code, they're simply interpreted by the particular production and the particular symbols that we're processing at a given point. So we started this out, and just as all top-down parsers, we push the start symbol. Now, that really would probably be as a number. Each symbol, terminal, non-terminal, would be given a number. So we push a number onto a stack that grows and shrinks. Our goal is to match everything on the stack. So initially, we want to match something from the start symbol. That's an entire program. If we do that, we'll terminate normally. So as long as the stack is not empty, we're going to keep processing. As soon as it goes empty, we're out of the main body, and we've completed our parse. So that's equivalent of matching all the calls in a particular parsing procedure and getting to the end of the procedure and then terminating normally. Now, for purposes of fitting this on the slide, let's let X represent the top symbol on the parse stack. So every time we have a stack, of course, there's a top symbol. And rather than saying top of stack or something, I'll call it X. That simply makes my slide a little bit more concise. X marks the spot. And CT is the current token. And it's always the case that X being a terminal, it's going to match current token or have an error. If it's a non-terminal, it's going to call the predict table, the LL table, and tell us what production to start matching. So we ask, are you a terminal? Well, assuming that any symbol can be distinguished between terminal and non-terminal, typically small numbers will be one and larger numbers will be the other, with some particular value being the limit. So it says, if you're a terminal, we're doing exactly what we did in the parsing procedures, namely we're going to match X, and that's implicitly going to update the current token. We're then going to do a pop. What the pop is getting rid of the symbol we just matched from our parse stack. So we consumed it from the input, called the scanner, popped it from the stack. Otherwise, we look up the table. So this is the parse table, and we're going to index it by the name of the non-terminal. We know it's a non-terminal because we're in the else part of the isTerminal, and the current token. We get the entry and say, are you not error? If you're error, then we have a parsing error, and we give an error message. Otherwise, we're going to take the current top of the stack, which is a non-terminal, and push on it M symbols, where M symbols are the number of symbols in the right-hand side. That might be zero if it's lambda, which means that that's effectively doing nothing. We take the symbol and throw it away. We've done nothing. Or we push some number of symbols. So it says replace X with Y1 through YM on the parse stack. Now, there's a slight ambiguity there. When I push this on the stack, is YM or YM the topmost symbol? This is one of those things you can easily figure it out if you know what it has to do, but let's be clear. Which of those will be on there? When I say push that on the stack, I'm not being absolutely clear in which order, left to right or right to left. So which way should it be? It should be right to left so that the top symbol on the stack is the leftmost symbol. Remember, the stack is always prejudiced towards the last symbol pushed, which is the first symbol popped. So in this case, Y1 will be the first symbol, and that makes sense. It says, I've determined that X is going to be the sequence Y1 through YM, and I'm going to process each of those in turn. And that's the entire driver. A real driver might be a tad fancier. I have a syntax error in the case that I don't have any valid prediction. But that's the entire driver for any language LL has, big, small, or intermediate. So let's see how this all works. So in this particular case, oh, let me go back. I just want to make sure everything is in order. So in this particular case, we need to have a table. Let me go to my notes and get... We need that parse table there to... So what I need to refer to is the table on page 255, I believe it is. I don't have that there. So what's going to happen here is we have prog, and we have a table that says prog, and remaining input is left brace. And if I go to my table, it says do production number one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to push those symbols on the stack. Excuse me? Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Is that readable? Just barely. You may have the hard copy in front of you. It better be readable for me. So in this particular case, it says production number one, and up there, production number one is the left brace statements, right brace, EOF. Now, what I'm trying to really emphasize here is that this is doing what the parsing procedure did in pretty much the same way, except in this case, I don't have the hardwired code. I simply have the driver in the table. So it sees a left brace. It says, hey, that's a terminal. That's what our driver asked for. And it says, does that match the current token, which is always the leftmost symbol? The answer is yes, it does. They get popped off, and I go down to here. I see statements, and statements seeing the identifier says I do production number two, which is statements goes to statement followed by statements. So this guy gets expanded into two without matching anything. Again, that's exactly what the parsing procedure did, but in this particular case, it's always just symbols on the stack. They're not calls to various parsing procedures, and therefore it's probably going to be a tad more efficient, so they don't have the overhead of calling and returning. So this thing is saying at this stage, the parse stack is saying I have yet to match a statement, statements, right brace, and EOF, and there's my remaining input. So I look at statements and an identifier, and it says production four, and that's identifier equals expression semicolon. So all of a sudden, I have many additional symbols on the stack with the identifier first. Identifier matches A, get down to here. Equal matches equal, get down to there. I see an expr and a B. Expr and B, an identifier says production six, which is identifier etail. So there it is. Identifier matches identifier. I see an etail and a plus. The table says if I see an etail and a plus, go to production seven, which is plus expr. So I add that in there. The plus matches the plus. Get down to here. Expression seeing an identifier says production six, which is ID etail. So I get down to there. Etail seeing a semicolon says do production nine, which is lambda. So that's effectively popping this guy off the stack. Then semicolons match. Statements seeing a right brace says that is going to be production three, which is lambda. So statements disappears. Brace matches brace. EOF matches EOF, and we're done. So the advantage here is twofold. One, it's going to be a tad more efficient. And two, this is very generic. All this information is pulled out of tables. So if I were to change the grammar, I'd still need some tool perhaps to reanalyze and say, do you have any conflicts? But assuming I have no prediction conflicts, it simply updates the tables, uses the same driver, and I have confidence that any minor clerical errors that might have been made in a parsing procedure are not possible. Again, how about syntax errors? It's the same idea. As long as I have a valid prefix, it'll go into the routine as if it were a valid program. When it reaches the point where something's invalid, as we'll see, it'll either have a mismatch or a prediction conflict. Let's go ahead and see that. So in this stage, prog predicts, as before, brace statements brace. Braces match. Statements predicts statement followed by statements. Statement goes to an identifier. The identifiers match. It sees the equal and the plus. So we reach the case where on the top of the parse stack was the terminal symbol equal. The current token was the terminal symbol plus. They are not equal. They don't match. So it gives me a syntax error. And it says the current token plus fails to match the expected equal. So we find an error automatically and at what I would argue is probably the most reasonable position, namely the first time we find a symbol that doesn't fit as a prefix of some valid program. As long as I have a valid program prefix, I have to expect that it probably is valid. It's only when I know for sure it's invalid that I call an error. Well, we've talked about parsing, but how do I go about actually building the parse tree as if I want that? And we're going to have two versions. We'll first have something called the concrete parse tree. And I kind of always wondered about that name when I was a student. I saw sort of gangsters going, taking you out and giving you concrete galoshes or something. But concrete means in the sense of non-abstract. This will give you a tree that's an exact replica of what the grammar required. That's a simpler one to build, but it turns out it's less useful because abstract syntax trees are smaller and they cut back on unnecessary information in the tree. Things like commas and semicolons, which have no value once you've gone ahead and done the parse. They're there really just to help the parser out. So building a concrete tree, that is, you're going to have an exact replica of the parse tree, which is still useful, but it's not as useful as we would like. Well, all we do is create something called a semantic stack. And it turns out Java Cup is actually doing for this automatically. Remember we had something called the parse stack. Which might have a series of symbols that we want to match. So remember a parse stack for an assignment might be ID equals ID. Or ID equals, I'm sorry, expr. Semicolon. And remember what happened is, as we parsed, we threw the symbol away. But it turns out if we're building a tree, we don't want to throw it away. What we do instead is, once we match a symbol, we put it on something called the semantic stack. And the semantic stack simply holds the items we've matched, but we haven't put into tree form yet. So now we don't want to just parse. We also want to build a tree representing the exact structure. So remember, this thing was a statement. So in this particular case, it would match an ID, and that would go onto the stack. What this means is we'd actually have a pointer to the symbol, the token we actually matched. We see equal, we'd have a pointer to the equal. When we see expr, this would actually be a pointer to the subtree that we've already built. Remember, this is kind of what we've been doing when we've been doing our AST building. What would happen is, as this guy was parsed, as I'll show you shortly, when it's all done, it pushes a pointer, a reference, to a complete subtree representing the production in question. Expr's already been parsed, so I have a pointer to that subtree. It might be a single identifier, it might be an identifier with a tail, whatever it might be, and then a semicolon. And at this stage, I'm at the end of a production, and here's that example I just showed. And what happens when I'm at the end of a production, I have a little flag that says time to build a tree. And in this particular case, it says, in this case, build a tree, kind of like you're doing the AST. In this case, it is concrete, so it has exactly four symbols, because there are four symbols in the right-hand side. And it's told that the right-hand side is statement. So it goes ahead and says, build yourself a tree called statements, probably using a constructor. And it says you need four arguments because there are four symbols on the right-hand side and pop them off the stack. So in this case, the rightmost is the first thing on the stack. So statement ends with a semicolon, has an expr, has an equal, and has an ID. And I build that tree. And I pop these guys off the tree and I put a reference to statement instead. And whoever wanted to have a statement as part of its body, part of a statement list, will now have a reference to that. So it's building a tree very similar to you are, bottom up. Effectively, it sees tiny little trees, builds them, holds on to them in the semantic stack. When it sees a complete production, pops off the little bitty trees, makes a bigger tree, saves a pointer to that. That's exactly what your cup is already doing for you, except you don't see it, so it's not as much of a bother. And in fact, if I wanted to do an AST, we do a little bit fancier still. The difference with an AST primarily is that not all the components on the right-hand side are kept. Things like the assignment arrow or a semicolon may not be of interest. So if I was doing something where I'm building an AST, similar to what you're doing, all the suffix notation does is give me a reference to that particular symbol, well, without having to count. So it says there are two symbols in here I really care about, with respect to building an abstract tree. So it says, in this particular case, I care about the identifier and I care about the expression. So I create a statement node, or maybe in this case, it ought to be an assignment node of, no, I guess it should be a statement node in this case, of the identifier and the expression. So it's like I was doing previously, except I'm having fewer trees. It's abstract. And because I have fewer trees, I have pointers to the subtrees I want and the subtrees I don't want. So in that case, they have a tree structure that says, here's a statement. It's got two things. One of them is an identifier, and the other is an expression. So that's what's basically going on as the parser is running. It's also building the tree for you if you want. And you have something similar to this in CUP, where it's doing it in a different kind of parser, but much the same structure. So let me get out of this. Come on, guy. This is just a continuation of what I was talking about previously. I had a little extra on this one. Come on. So I've talked about LL as if it's the world's greatest parsing technique, and it is very good in a lot of ways. The downside of it, and the reason we're not actually using it in our class, is that not the full range of productions that we would like to use are accessible to LL. I never claimed that all grammars are LL. They most certainly aren't. And it turns out there are a couple of grammar idioms that we'd like to have that don't work so well under LL. Turns out under our alternative, LALR, they are more acceptable. So let me show you what goes wrong and how we would fix it. So suppose So if I had a grammar like the Java CUP, not the Java CUP grammar, but the CSX grammar that I gave in class, I might say, can we make it an LL1 parser out of it? If I could, that'd be ideal, or perhaps ideal. But it turns out that a couple of the idioms we use in that particular grammar don't fit automatically. There are ways to change it by doing grammar editing, but we'll see that has a downside too. So one of the more common issues, and you probably noticed this when I was discussing earlier, is it's not uncommon to have productions with the same left-hand side have a common prefix. Here's an example I used earlier. Assignments and method calls look alike. How do I distinguish the two? Remember what I did previously was I edited out the prefix and matched the suffix later on. But the problem with that is it delays me recognizing, am I in an assignment or am I in a method call until later into the tree. It turns out that that makes things building the tree a little nastier, as I'll show you. So this is a slight negative. It's not terrible. We could live with it. But we would like to have a grammar that doesn't care if the production begins with the same symbols, as long as somewhere along the line I can distinguish. Turns out the Java CUP is able to handle this. And you may have noticed we have several productions that have the property that they have the same left-hand side and they begin with the same symbol. And the CUP parser did not complain about that. So that's one issue. The other one is more significant. And it turns out that left recursion, which is something we use all the time in grammars, is the kiss of death with respect to LL parsers. Now, what do I mean by left recursion? It simply means that the left-hand side symbol is also the initial symbol of the right-hand side. So remember, we saw an example of that in the grammar we had where E goes to E plus T. Superficially, that's not bad at all. In fact, it's quite a reasonable way to specify expressions. But in terms of predictive parsers, it immediately runs into infinite loop, an infinite prediction. Imagine we had something like this, and I said, okay, here's E. And remember, what I want to do is go ahead and predict some production. So, and my current token is whatever it is, CT. So CT and E say, hey, that's the right production to use. So I say, fine, hey, cool. The rule is I take E and I replace it with E plus T. And I go back to the predictor. But notice what is changed. And the answer is nothing. My symbol is still E. My current token is still CT. So if I did a prediction before, I'm going to do the same prediction again. So I'm going to say take this E and make it into an E plus T and predict again. Here's E and T, so I'm going to go ahead and do it again. And you can see I'm into an infinite prediction loop. If, on the other hand, I never predict that production, why in the world do I have it? I don't want to have a production I never can use. That's obviously going to fail. So it happens that left recursion is just simply not acceptable. If you look back at your notes, at all the examples I gave for LL grammars earlier in today's lecture, I never had left recursion. I changed the grammar. Remember when I had expressions, I didn't have expression goes to expression plus something. I had expression goes to identifier and expression tail. It's something like expression goes to identifier, expression tail, and then an expression tail goes to lambda or, let's see, what is it in this case, operator and expression. Something like that. So in this case, I never had left recursion. Oh, thank you. And the reason for it is I knew in advance that it would fail to be LL and I changed it. So the downside is these common idioms get in our way. The upside is there are ways to rewrite the grammar to handle this. And that in some cases makes things a little easier. But it's still the case that we're going to have to rewrite the grammar, and it may come out in a form that's not as attractive as we would like. So in this particular case, we have a common prefix, and in this case, we make it look more mathematical than it has to. It says, suppose I have a number of productions, all of which have a common prefix alpha. It might be a single symbol, or it might be several symbols. The rule is I cannot have a common prefix because I'll see something that predicts this alpha, it'll also predict that alpha and also that alpha, and I won't distinguish among my choices. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and change that, and let me show you the factoring of it. So I had A goes to, and I'll just do two of them, alpha beta or alpha gamma. Almost like I'm back in campus and we're doing pledge week or something. So in this particular case, I cannot have the common prefix. So what I do is I rewrite this to have one production that absorbs the common prefix. So I have A goes to the common prefix. And then have a new non-terminal I add. Remember, that was that suffix business that says this is going to have a suffix. I sometimes call it a tail. Same idea, two different names. So suffix then goes to beta or gamma. In a more tangible case, here's where I started back at today's lecture. I had two different assignments. Two different statements that began with ID, an assignment and a method call. And I had to back out of that, so I effectively did this transformation. I said, I'll start with an ID, and I'll create a suffix, and the suffix will be the remainder of the two structures. Notice one of the nasty things about this is the tree that I build is less attractive. If I ended up building a tree, I'd have statements. And one of the things a statement could go to is the prefix, which is ID, and then I have the suffix, which then could go to, for example, equal X per semicolon. So in this particular case, I don't have the entire statement under all the components of the statement under statement. I actually have a piece in ID and a piece in suffix. And again, I can live with that, but it's a little less attractive. And when I show you expressions, it's even less attractive, but it's something we're forced into. So problem one, common prefixes make us do factoring. Removing left recursion is a little nastier still, in that I have to go from a left recursive to what amounts to a right recursive structure. So let's look at that. And this is the case where I have A goes to A alpha, or let's just say beta or gamma. That's probably enough. So I cannot have left recursion. So I have to have some way of simulating the left recursion, but not having it become directly apparent. So what I do is I kind of look this backwards. And I say in this particular case, in this case, I'm going to apply A some number of times. But then what I'm going to do is finally go ahead and have to go to choose one of these other productions. So let me make that clear. Suppose I actually do use that first production. I say A goes to A alpha. And I may decide to use that a second time. So A goes to alpha alpha. But I'm not going to do that forever because I would have that infinite recursion I was concerned about. So eventually A's got to go to something else. The something else is the beta or the gamma. So what's going to happen eventually, I'm going to have something called N. And that's going to either go to beta or gamma. And I put that down first. So in this case, it's the value I'd have gotten not using recursion. And finally, I say, well, I could have used recursion to get zero or more alphas. Well, how do I get zero or more something? I'm going to create something called T for tail. And it can go to lambda. There's your zero. Or I can have T go to alpha T. Notice there's a recursion. Oh, yep, thank you. There's a recursion, but it's a right recursion, not a left recursion. And that allows us to get rid of this problem of having a non-terminal directly predict itself. This looks kind of complex, but let's go ahead and do that expert plus ID business I talked about earlier. So we have expert goes to expert plus ID or ID. And that's pretty similar to what we have in our grammar. But again, it's got that left recursion right there. So that cannot be tolerated. So it says what I'm going to have to do is rewrite expert into N and T. In the case where I have N has only one choice, in this case, N, well, let me first do it. N goes to ID tail, or N goes to ID, and tail goes to plus ID tail or lambda. Now, as a slight optimization, if N goes with only one choice, I can simply back substitute and replace N with its only choice. So that effectively gives me expert goes to ID tail. Notice that looks exactly like what we were doing earlier in the day or night now. And here's tail goes to plus ID tail or lambda. This generates exactly the same as before. It generates a single identifier with a tail going to lambda or identifier plus identifier and so on. The downside is the structure I had up here, if I have something like A plus B plus C, looks like this. Expert goes to expert plus ID, which is and let me. So using the original grammar, I get a parse tree like this. And the cool thing about this is pretty much in the structure I want to group together operands in the order in which they will be processed. It says, build a subtree that has an A plus a B. Oops. So let me finish my thought here. And then add in the C. If I do the other form, I have expert goes to A and then a T, which is plus ID, which is B, and a T, which is plus C, and a T, which then goes to lambda. This right tree is demonstrably inferior, because in this case, notice my expression is broken apart. I have one operand here and the other there, and it's grouping them in the wrong order. It's sort of a situation there saying doing the plus C, plus C, and then a plus B in the A. So in building my AST, you think building the AST now is nasty. If you had to change this into an AST of the form we expect, it'd be way nastier. So that's another thing, is that sometimes we get parse trees that don't match very well with the intended semantics. So this is a great place to break, and I'll talk a little bit more about LL, and then we'll talk about the technique we actually use, and it'll be the bulk of next lecture.